Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcasts, or it's easier to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, France 24, Radio Havana Cuba, and NHK World Radio Japan. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Clearly, the U.S. presidential election was the primary topic in the international media this week. Here is a review of how various European leaders responded to the Trump victory. They all congratulated him, but remain wary of how future relations will evolve, especially regarding defense and the environment. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has congratulated Donald Trump on his election win, but leaders here are wary of what a second Trump administration could mean for Germany and Europe. Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine has made security a top priority, and Trump threatened to leave NATO during his first term in office.
German politicians are congratulating Donald Trump. Polling in Germany shows that the public had hoped for a win by Kamala Harris, but their leaders will have a different partner to work with.
Americans have voted. Trump clearly won the election. I congratulate him on this. President Trump will take office at a time of great challenges and crises. Things will certainly be different under a Trump administration.
Das hat Donald Trump auch immer öffentlich klar gemacht.
Our message is this. Germany remains a reliable transatlantic partner. We are aware of the contribution we make to this partnership and will continue to make it in the future. This also applies to the threat that all NATO allies believe Russia poses to security in the Euro-Atlantic area.
Trump's last time in office strained bilateral relations. Now, with uncertainty regarding Trump's stance on Ukraine and NATO, pressure is mounting on Germany and Europe to strengthen their security policy. We Europeans will now have to take on even more security policy responsibility. Today, tomorrow, the day after tomorrow. This is not a substitute for our transatlantic partnership. It is an investment in our common transatlantic partnership. Opposition leader Friedrich Merz, who is a leading candidate to be the next chancellor, emphasized the US's role in the world, but also urged for a stronger Europe that can meet the US as a partner on an equal level. For now, Germany is offering its continued cooperation to the U.S. while simultaneously pushing for a stronger, more sovereign Europe.
Well, more European leaders have been congratulating Donald Trump. Hungary's far-right Prime Minister Viktor Orbán, a close ally, wrote, "The biggest comeback in U.S. political history. Congratulations to President Donald Trump on his enormous win, a much-needed victory for the world." Here's French President Emmanuel Macron's, "Congratulations, President Donald Trump. Ready to work together as we were able to do for 4 years, with your convictions and with mine, with respect and ambition for more peace and prosperity." And added to that, Austria's Chancellor Karl Nehammer, "Congratulations to Donald Trump on the election victory. The United States is an important strategic partner for Austria. We look forward to further expanding and strengthening our transatlantic relations to successfully address global challenges together." Well, for more reaction from Europe, we can cross over to the European Parliament in Brussels and speak to Isabella Nerven. She's a Member of Parliament for the Greens. She's also a member of the delegation of the European Union to the United States. Great to have you with us. I wonder if we can start with your reaction to Trump's win.
This is, of course, a democratic election, and the EU and the US needs to cooperate and continue with the very, very important issues that we have at hand now. But I'm also worried because I was a minister in Sweden when Donald Trump won the last time. And I remember very clearly what happened immediately at the global stage when the U.S. Really abandoned its leadership on climate totally. And also that the rights of women and the world, the rights-based world order was also questioned during that time, Agenda 2030 and the UN institutions. So this is a moment where the EU needs to step up very, very much and take leadership.
Trump has already threatened the EU with tariffs and brought security cooperation very much into question. What could it mean for Europe, a second coming of Donald Trump?
Yes, I mean, this is really something that we are very worried about, that tariffs and all these types of trade measures will hamper the global economy and not least the situation here in Europe. But we have to adapt to this situation, and I think the EU must make sure that we are self-sufficient on many areas. But also, we live in a climate crisis. This we can't forget about. And if the US now leaves the Paris Agreement, or maybe even the UN Climate Convention, we have a very, very challenging situation globally, where we need to take the leadership and make sure that the industry and research, innovation, everything that is now under way to make the transition to a fossil-free economy, that doesn't stop now. And this is something that worries me a lot, because it's also connected to the economy, to the competitiveness of European businesses. And if the U.S. totally ignores the Paris Agreement and its businesses don't adapt to that, we will have even more strains when it comes to trade between the U.S. and the EU, because we also have our so-called carbon taxes that will also affect our trade.
Isabella Löwen, thank you so much for your time.
That report was from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. They're also available at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, France 24. A multitude of weather disasters were made worse because of the warming climate, as reported by Copernicus, which is the European Union's climate monitor. Then a series of press reviews on the Trump victory from Australia, China, Jerusalem, and Europe. Then a report on Netanyahu praising the Trump victory while admitting he has no plan to stop the wars in Gaza and Lebanon. Israel attacked the last remaining medical facility in northern Gaza, while Israeli settlers continued violent attacks on Palestinians in the West Bank. France 24.
It is not just the wildfires, like the one that swept through Camilo, California, Wednesday, charring homes so fast that firefighters could do little to save them. It is not just the devastating floods that brought death and destruction and left a nation reeling, like in Spain. Climate change may not cause such disastrous events, but it does make them more intense, frequent, and deadly, and they're occurring across the globe. According to the EU's climate monitor, Copernicus, 2024 is virtually certain to be the hottest year in recorded history.
We are bound to see more and more exceedances at the annual level. So this is the first. It won't be the last. It will be every single year it will become more likely for the temperature to pass the 1.5 threshold. And eventually, in 5-10 years' time, basically every single year will be above 1.5.
Copernicus says that while 2024 is slated to pass the 1.5 Celsius threshold, this does not mean that the Paris climate deal is off. It sets the goal to keep warming at or below that level for multiple years. But the planet remains far from that goal. At the current pace of greenhouse gas emissions, the United Nations warned that a 3.1-degree average warming is likely this century. With the climate change conference COP29 slated for November 11th, and on the heels of the election of Donald Trump, who is a climate change denier, scientists say that this alarming first of 1.5 degrees for this year serves as a stark warning that not enough is being done.
The day after Donald Trump's resounding victory in the US elections, the press have, not surprisingly, a lot to say, don't they, Ditti?
Yeah, a lot of worries about what this means for the battle against climate change, the effects of which we're actually starting to see in very adverse weather all across the world. Donald Trump, like many but not all of his supporters, is a climate skeptic. His words right after he was elected president was, drill, baby, drill. The Washington Post notes he wants to unleash domestic fossil fuel production, dismantle key environmental protections, scale back federal support for renewable energies, but also electric vehicles. He could also withdraw the U.S.'s adherence to the Paris Climate Change Accords, as he did in his first term. And if he does that, well, it would have very lasting consequences on the international community and the global battle to fight climate change.
And speaking of the world, what about the international press, Dipti? How are they reacting to this Donald Trump victory?
Well, let's start with the Australian paper The Age. On its front page says, here's Donny. He's a man accused of 34 felonies, twice impeached, accused of racism, misogyny, inciting a riot. But he now has secured a second term in the White House. The South China Morning Post on its front page calls him the comeback king, dedicating a full page to his victory in the elections. Elsewhere in the Middle East, this is from the Jerusalem Post, which headlines on Donald Trump's quote that he's going to stop all wars, notably the war in Ukraine, but also Israel's war in Gaza. And this is from the paper from Burkina Faso called Le Pays, which wonders what impact this presidency will have on relations with the African continent. The paper says African countries have already learned how to handle themselves in an increasingly multipolarized world. An inward-looking America, though, could dictate Africa's behavior, particularly when it comes to bilateral agreements in the future.
You found some reaction from here in Europe, too?
Absolutely. A lot of reaction from the European papers. Not a surprise. This is from Der Tagesspiegel, a German paper. You don't really need to understand German to know what that says on its front page. The end, it says pretty ominously. This is from El Periódico, a Spanish paper, which calls Donald Trump Hurricane Trump, who's causing a lot of concern now for European leaders who are very unsure about what this all means. This is from a Portuguese daily, Público, which wonders how the world will survive a second Donald Trump presidency. La Repubblica, the Italian paper, says in an almost identical photo on its front page, he's back, it says on its front page, dedicating a lot of space to the U.S. Elections as well. Also noting that Donald Trump's close ally, Elon Musk, is now $13 billion richer thanks to this election. Here in France, this is from L'Humanité, which is a communist paper, which evokes the American nightmare that has now begun. The Sun, British daily, The Sun says he's been shot, sued, tried, insulted, and written off, but American, ordinary Americans say you're rehired. And finally, this is from Society, a French magazine, which you can see here, sees Lady Liberty being hung or being hanged by Donald Trump's red tie.
We can now go across to correspondent Nogo Tarnopolsky in Jerusalem. Good afternoon to you. Benjamin Netanyahu clearly hailing Trump's victory.
Yes, absolutely. Good afternoon. Not just Netanyahu, but his son, who is a very, very influential social media activist. And almost all of Netanyahu's ministers came right out of the stables immediately to congratulate Trump.
Will Israel be pressured to end its offensive in Gaza before the 20th of January, something that Donald Trump wants to see happen?
Right. I mean, that's a huge question now, because, of course, had Harris won, we could have expected some kind of stability in policy. Obviously, President Biden is still president until January 20th. But the fact of the matter is that Donald Trump has said repeatedly that he wants Netanyahu to wrap up this war, whereas Netanyahu has said repeatedly, including yesterday, that this war is ongoing. He is not willing to set an end point. And moreover, Trump's vice president, J.D. Vance, we should remember he was the only Republican in Congress who voted against military aid to Israel. So we may be seeing some bumpy times ahead in this relationship. Netanyahu is trying to solidify his hold on power inside the country. He fired a defense minister who is a former general and who really had the ability to manage this war. And he replaced him with a man who has literally no military experience. The suspicion here in Israel is that Netanyahu, who is on trial for corruption and therefore cannot serve as a minister, that he's trying to somehow control the war himself and control relations with the army himself through this new weaker appointment. So there's a lot of tumult here in the streets, in commerce. Some businesses closed today, urging their workers to go out to the streets to protest. The opposition leaders have done the same, and it's unclear how Netanyahu will be able to move forward.
Noga, thank you very much for that update. Noga Tarnopolsky reporting there for us from Jerusalem.
These buildings in Beit Lahia reduced to rubble by Israeli airstrikes. Residents searched through the ruins looking for survivors, administering first aid to the wounded as they find them. Medical sources on site say there were several deaths. According to the World Health Organization, the Israeli Air Force struck Kamal Adwan Hospital, the last medical facility still operating in the north of the Gaza Strip, a region where ambulances can no longer operate.
A large number of injured people are bleeding on the roads and in the places of various targets in the northern Gaza Strip. And there are no civil defense or first aid crews to perform humanitarian duties and transport and provide the necessary medical assistance to them.
The Israeli army is continuing with its offensive in northern Gaza, which has intensified over the past month. Its stated aim is to prevent Hamas fighters in the area from regrouping. Meanwhile, in the West Bank, Israeli settlers continue violent attacks on Palestinian communities. On Monday, some 20 cars were burned in front of a building in Albira near Ramallah, an act denounced by Israel's ally, the United States. But that has fallen on deaf ears, as have previous calls by Washington to halt the building of settlements in the occupied territory.
Those reports and press reviews were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com. as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. They are also available at most podcast sites. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. Venezuela concluded its World Anti-Fascist Parliamentary Forum. They stressed the need for global unity in the fight against fascism, neo-fascism, and imperialism. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Vice President of the United Socialist Party of Venezuela, Diosdado Cabello, assured that the anti-fascist parliamentary forum that his country has stopped fascism in its tracks in the last presidential election in Venezuela on July the 28th. When we tell you that we put a stop to fascism on July the 28th, we claim that great victory. It has not been easy, and we have had the support of the free peoples of the world and friendly governments who know what really happened in Venezuela. He also stressed the need for unity in the fight against fascism, neo-fascism, and similar expressions. He said, it's not just Venezuela. It's not just Cuba. Going for Venezuela is going for all of America, for the free peoples who have not surrendered to imperialism. And Diosdado Cabello also assured that fascism, neo-fascism, and other expressions arise with great force and asserted that Zionism is exactly the same. In this sense, the Vice President of the National Assembly said the hegemonic policies emerged in the last century. We have experienced similar expressions here 500 years ago when the Spanish Empire arrived and compared it with the Spanish government's confrontation with the tragedy of Valencia. They showed up 5 days later in their royal robes and the people demanded it. He also compared colonization with what is happening in the Gaza Strip, in addition to taking over our lands, very similar to what Israel is doing with the people of Palestine. They say that the genocide of the conquest is the greatest in all of history, of all time. The Spanish Empire wants us to think that, and they want us to thank them, because they came here to teach us. They are immoral, just as immoral as imperialism is in the United States that supports Israel. Just as immoral are the governments of the European Union that shamelessly support fascism in Ukraine against the brothers of the Republican Federation of Russia. He stressed that the people of Argentina will face fascism, describe them as noble fighters who do not give up and with a fighting spirit. We have extraordinary faith that sooner rather than later, the Argentinian people will raise their voice against the fascism that they are trying to sow in Argentina.
That report was from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. There's no podcast, however. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 to 11 p.m. at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English versions at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program, there is a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show airborne. Please join them. And if you are listening on a public radio station, please help support them as well. We will conclude with NHK Japan. The operator of the Fukushima nuclear reactors has finally managed to retrieve a few grams of highly radioactive fuel debris out of the 880 tons remaining in the facilities. Japan's nuclear regulator has given permission to operate the first interim storage site for spent nuclear fuel. The Russian presidential office has declined to comment on the U.S. government report that thousands of North Korean troops have arrived in the Kursk region. Health authorities in Lebanon say that Israel has killed more than 3,000 people. NHK Japan.
The operator of Japan's Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant says it has completed the first test retrieval of fuel debris from one of the damaged reactors. Removal of all debris is considered the most challenging step in the decommissioning of the facility, which was devastated in the 2011 earthquake and tsunami. Tokyo Electric Power Company began experimenting with the removal of molten fuel mixed with parts of the reactor structure at the number 2 reactor in September. To do so, workers placed a pipe-like device inside the containment vessel to grab the material from its base. Last week, the tool succeeded in retrieving several grams of debris. An estimated 880 tons of radioactive debris remains across Fukushima Daiichi's number 1, 2, and 3 reactors. The plant stands in the towns of Okuma and Futaba. This was a reaction to the test retrieval from a woman who runs a restaurant in Okuma.
They have finally reached the starting line. I hope they can do that kind of work safely. That's the most important thing.
This man is an evacuee from Futaba. He's now living in another part of the prefecture.
It's a tiny amount, but there are 880 tons. It's going to take a long time. If there were no debris, more people would move back. We can't do anything unless this work is done.
Japan's nuclear regulator has officially given the green light for the country's first interim storage site for spent nuclear fuel to start operation. The facility is located in Mutsu City in the northeastern prefecture of Aomori. It's designed to store spent nuclear fuel from power plants for up to 50 years. The first batch of about 70 spent fuel units arrived at the facility in September. The site operator then spent about 2 weeks conducting safety checks and other tests. On Wednesday, the Nuclear Regulation Authority received confirmation that there were no problems with the safety checks. The authority then issued a certificate allowing the site to start operation. Some city residents have expressed concerns. They say they're worried about accepting the spent fuel when the next destination for it has not been set. The government says it plans to eventually move the fuel to a reprocessing plant elsewhere in Aomori. But that facility remains under construction, and its completion date has already been pushed back repeatedly.
The Russian presidential office has declined to comment on a U.S. government report that thousands of North Korean troops have arrived in the Kursk region. The Ukrainian military is conducting cross-border attacks there. Presidential office spokesperson Dmitry Peskov was asked on Tuesday whether he could confirm or comment on a statement made by U.S. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller the previous day. Well, Miller said the department had assessed that as many as 10,000 North Korean troops have made their way to Kursk. He added they could enter combat in the coming days. Peskov declined to comment, noting that every U.S. official who has spoken about the issue said the U.S. side doesn't have final confirmation. In late October, Russian President Vladimir Putin did not deny reports that North Korean troops were dispatched to his country when asked about it at a news conference. Health authorities in Lebanon say the death toll from Israeli attacks has risen above 3,000. Israeli forces said on Tuesday that they had destroyed dozens of Hezbollah-linked structures and killed its fighters in southern Lebanon, where a ground offensive continues. The military is also stepping up its operations in Gaza. It said on Tuesday troops have killed dozens of Hamas fighters in Jabalia in the northern Gaza Strip. The officers also said they destroyed the group's bases in central Gaza. Health officials in the enclave say more than 43,000 people have died since the conflict began last year. In another development, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced on Tuesday that he had removed Defense Minister Yoav Gallant and decided to appoint Foreign Minister Israel Katz as the new defense minister.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard now at 9 p.m. instead of 10, same frequency, 11735, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp and all podcast sites. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You will have to look even harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Find information for making an online donation. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I'm recuperating from spinal injury, I'm staying in a house that is connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.